Hello?
Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, this evening our special guest is Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. We're going to be talking about of finances, what's going on. But before we get into that, I want to discuss a news story that's just come out, where, of course, all 16 of our intelligence agencies, we have 16 intelligence agencies, from the DIA to the NSA to the CIA to the FBI to military intelligence, army intelligence, marine intelligence, Coast Guard intelligence, naval intelligence. We have 16 intelligence agencies which work separately and work together, and they've all come to the same conclusion. The government's been lying to us, telling us that there's a danger from Iran, whereas it's going to be somewhere between the year 2010 to 2015, where they could possibly be able to build a nuclear weapon that would threaten anybody at all. And there is no evidence that they are working on a nuclear weapon, that they've been telling the truth all the time. And that the executive branch of government, if that's true, the executive branch of government has been trying to deceive the American people to justify going to war with Iran. Now, what is this really all about? Well, I will tell you that I believe that the people who really control our government, and believe me, it is not George Bush, and even though his handler is Dick Cheney is simply an agent of people far more powerful within the Trilateral Commission and within the occult world government. They are worried that we are going to get into some real financial problems if we go to war with Iran. We can't even afford what we're doing today. And that's why they are allowing the surge to succeed in Iraq, because they've got to begin to cut back on the amount of money they're wasting over there because of this worldwide problem as far as collateralized debt obligations, these housing loans that are going bad. Combined with the skyrocketing price of food, which they're lying about, and the skyrocketing price of fuel, which they're lying about, they still insist inflation's only at 2%. And anybody who believes that, has to believe in the tooth fairy. But it's what really is so impressive is that suddenly today, everything changed. Iran is no longer a threat, ladies and gentlemen. They found out that, oh, shucks, we were wrong all the time. I guess we're just not going to have to go to war with Iran. Now, I don't know what's going to happen. I believe there are powerful spiritual forces that are really directing everything going on. But I think it is so amazing that all 16 of our intelligence agencies have agreed Iran is not a threat. There is no urgency about going to war with Iran or about striking Iran or about trying to stop there. A nuclear development, because their nuclear development would appear is primarily for peaceful purposes. Oh my goodness, I guess, shucks, we just got the wrong intelligence again and we almost fell into another trap. Well, anyway, of course, this simply changes the entire spectrum of what's going on today. Isn't it amazing, Bob, how everything can just change within 24 hours?
It really is, and
Tell me what you make of this sudden change in story.
Well, I think that there are people within these agencies, including the Pentagon, that believes the whole thing is insanity, and it will lead to a nuclear holocaust. And they don't want to be turned into crispy critters. And so what they're saying is, no, that's not a threat. And we can't do that. And hopefully, that he'll put, that to rest, till this man is out of office.
at least for the time being. We're going to be back in just a moment with Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. Well, Bob, you know, and Chris, it's just conjecture on my part, but I mean, the one reason why this material was allowed to come out, I mean, we've known this for a long time. We've known that the CIA said there's nothing to worry about from Iran, but now suddenly for this to come out and be popularized all across America would suggest to me that maybe they're concerned about the financial implications of another war. What are your thoughts?
Well, that could be it. I know that, if you remember, I referred a number of times to Brzezinski's statements, which are now 17, 18 months ago, that we laid out a plan in the early 1980s for the Middle East, and the administration has just made a terrible mess of the whole thing, and we should, you know, as quickly as possible withdraw from Iraq and under no circumstances go after Iran. And that what Bush and Cheney and others in the neocon comic book, if you want to call it that, have done is accomplish the worst possible thing for the American military and also for the debt that government owes, because that $600 billion does not show up in the budget. It's off budget. And but I really think within the intelligence agencies, I think they may have unilaterally just said enough is enough. I think it's sort of like a palace revolt saying no further and you can't go any further. I really think that that's what it is, and I think that the Illuminati powers behind government are very happy about that. In fact, they might have even instigated it, and because they don't want to stay in Iraq because it's been turned upside down. They don't want to go in Iraq because they can't afford it. And as you're very well aware, the British and the French and other European governments, including Germany, along with our government, what they have done is set up a scenario for a war in Kosovo. And I've been talking about this for months, and I'm one of the few people in the world who talks about it. And I think December 6th is drop-dead date, and the Kosovo government says they're going to declare a unilateral declaration of
hold that thought, start right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Bob Chapman expressed the belief that there's sort of almost like a palace revolt in the intelligence agencies, which include the military, saying we don't want to go into Iran. This is unnecessary. We're going to stop this foolishness. And for whatever purpose, whether that's the case or not, certainly when 16 intelligence agencies make a public statement saying there's no threat from Iran, and George Bush is sort of there stammering, well, shucks, you know, we know that they're going to attack us any time. We've got to get to them before they attack us and threaten America. And, well, of course, basically we're seeing that there seem to be forces working behind the scenes far more powerful than the President of the United States. And then Bob's point was that the real plan is for a war in Kosovo. And you don't want to have a war in Kosovo and a war in Iran at the same time. And so Bob is anticipating that the war for independence of Kosovo is coming relatively soon. They've moved NATO troops down there. The Serbians, of course, with the full backing of the Russians, are going to oppose Kosovo going independent, because this has traditionally always been Serbian country. So, I mean, but Serbia could never stand up against NATO and these other countries, but Serbia with the back of Russia, with the backing of Russia, which is now the largest exporter of oil and natural gas in the world. 10 years ago, it was a bigger country. It couldn't even pay its debts. But thanks to American foreign aid, massive American foreign aid that has drilled their oil wells and drilled their gas wells and built their pipelines for them, we've created the best enemy money could buy. pick up the story there, Bob.
Well, I think, they have to keep something going in order to get people's attention away from the financial problems that the world has, and particularly the United States. And so if Kosovo happens as a conflict, I think it'll be low-intensity warfare. And they'll probably draw it out. Because I don't think that the Serbs will be any more aggressive than NATO will. And I don't know that NATO is really a match for the Serbs. You know, they're fighting for their own country. It's in their country. They have a very good army, and a lot of them have some extensive experience from the last conflict there. And the man who was elected to run Kosovo by his fellow Albanian Muslims is a crook and a drug dealer and all kinds of other terrible things. But it's a normal kind of relationship that the United States has had for many years. The saying is they never saw a dictator they didn't like. Well, they've gotten married to lots of criminals over the years, and so this is not unusual. I would think they would play it as a low-intensity conflict and try to draw it out as long as possible. But it could escalate, but it's too hard to guess. I do know, though, that the Serbs will try to occupy. I mean, it is their territory. And so we're going to know more in a couple of weeks here, actually a week. And we'll see how it develops, but it's far more explosive than anything in the world right now.
All right, fine. Of course, last time we had a confrontation there, well, we had massive NATO bombing of the Serbs until they were willing, of course, to pull their troops back, you know, and let this Kosovo have their semi-independence. So it'll be interesting to know. Certainly, the Serbs can have a great army, you know, and courageous fighters, but it's not going to do a bit of good if we bring the full power of American air power against them. So it'll be interesting
to
see.
If we do that, Stan, they're going to have to deal with the Russians.
Right. Well, it may very well be.
As a matter of fact, their equipment is far better.
Okay, well, let's get back then to what's happening.
So there's going to be this could be the start of a Third World War as well.
Well, that's how the First World War started, was right down there in the Balkans. So, and that was an unnecessary war, and 21 million people died. Maybe we get another one going and kill 100 or a couple hundred million this time. Who knows what these wicked and evil people are up to. But, of course, they create the wars, they finance both sides, and then we try to figure out what's going on. Well, let's get back now to what's happening financially, because, of course, you know, Henry Paulson has come out and said that maybe what we ought to do is either get the local communities to, you know, sell bonds so that they can make up for all these housing losses, the people who can't make the loans on their homes, or there's another recommendation, and that is we'll just freeze the interest rate so that these people who bought homes with adjustable rate mortgages, and of course now it's time to refinance, well, we're going to put a 5-year moratorium or a 3-year moratorium on that until this crisis is over. The trouble is that these are not American loans. Sure, we got a lot of loans here, but we've got these loans all over the world. Are other countries going to put moratoriums on money owed to them from the United States just because they're good people? So why don't you tell us where you think we are as far as this housing crisis, this collateralized debt obligation crisis, those are the loans that are made out of the home mortgages. Where do we stand and what's going to happen in your estimation?
Well, the estimate of bad loans is about 40% by government. It's about 35%. And I originally said half of them could go down. These are the subprimes and the ultra loans. And then I added to that a lot of borrowers with a high FOIC rating had gotten themselves involved in these kind of loans as well. And so there are some people with some very good credit who are also in that situation. And I think those are the ones that the government intends on, quote, saving, and by making arrangements with banks to give them breathing room. But then you've got, you know, the subprimes and the ultra loans, and there was a survey by Fitch that said some 85% of the people lied on their applications, and it was all fraud. The mortgage originators knew it was fraud. The banks knew. The investment banks knew. And then you had the rating agencies such as Fitch and Moody's and S&P making up ratings for these packages of loans at AAA so that they could be bought by institutions and governments, and when in fact they were triple B, and there's a big divide between those two ratings. And so we have a trail of fraud and deceit and criminal behavior. And why should any of these people be bailed out? I don't see any good reason. Most of them were involved in criminal activity. I mean, you know, to lie in a financial statement can be a felony. And so with that said, today Mr. Paulson, who is with really with Goldman Sachs, who in part runs our government, said that the municipalities such as cities, towns, counties, and states should float municipal bonds and take the money and subsidize these people who defrauded in order to get their homes. And I really don't think that's a very good idea. I certainly wouldn't want to pay, and I'm sure Stan wouldn't, for people who have done these sort of things.
But of course, it doesn't matter what you and I want or whether it's a good idea or not. The question is, will the communities go out and borrow money to subsidize these homeowners, many of whom, as you say, got their homes fraudulently?
They won't do it. So it's another stall for time. They're playing games. Same thing with the Super SIV fund. The losses are going to range, and I published this over a year ago. They're going to range from $450 billion to $1.3 trillion. And it could even go higher. It might go as high as $2 trillion. And these losses, needless to say, are phenomenal. I mean, there's no way to get the money back. And
well, all they have to do is just print more money, Bob. This is what they've been doing for a long time, you know. I mean, this is how you have all your prosperity. You just create the money out of nothing and then distribute it and let people buy whatever they want to and buy things on credit. And you know, and then, of course, you know, what they're doing is just putting out more money all the time. Every time there's a problem, they simply lower the interest rates and disseminate more money. That's how you create artificial prosperity.
Well, you're right. The problem is that the money can't be lent directly. And they put it through the banking system. And then the banking system has to lend it. And then the banking system would have to be guaranteed by the Fed. But you know, it's just another bailout, and it's not going to solve the problem, because after 3 or 4 years, the housing crisis isn't going to be over. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are guaranteeing over 40% of the loans in the country now, and they're both technically bankrupt.
But of course, what is happening is we're getting inflation, and inflation destroys the value of everything people have. And people don't understand because we never really had rampant inflation here, except, well, I may be there for a short period of time in 1979, 1980. But everything they're doing now is highly inflationary, and they're simply lying about the level of inflation. And when they say inflation is 2%, you know that they're lying. With fuel going up and food going up and all these other things going up, And what are they doing? Instead of contracting the money supply, they're expanding it, and heaven help those people on fixed incomes. Go ahead, Bob.
So I think that the losses are insurmountable. I believe that a number of major banks are already insolvent.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, and it'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
$10 to $12 billion, somewhere in there. Bob probably has a better idea than I do, but they had to have money so that they started borrowing money from this Arab sheikh, Abu Dhabi. Is that the right pronunciation?
Abu Dhabi.
Anyway, they borrowed, I don't know.
Abu Dhabi. I don't know. One of those.
Abu Dhabi, I think, is the one. And they borrowed at 11% interest. You know, if you're borrowing at 11% interest, what are you going to lend out at? Well, obviously, they're not going to lend out. They're trying to keep from going under. And this Arab sheikdom has lent them this amount of money, you know, well, with some sort of a preferred bond. But, you know... How long is this going to keep up? And when that money's gone, then what do you do? I mean, what did they? How much did they borrow? $6 or $8 billion?
Seven and a half.
Okay, well, obviously, Citicorp, the largest financial institution in the United States, can't borrow from other banks in the United States because they all know they are on the verge of collapse. But we're not hearing about this. Oh, everything's fine, you know, just the thing and getting better. Well, I'll tell you, the people working behind the scenes are frightened to death. Because Citicorp is not the only major financial institution that's in over its head. So you pick up the story there, Bob.
Well, it's pretty widespread. And because these investment banks and banks have managed to put a great deal of their liabilities in hedge funds, which they're responsible for, but it keeps them off their balance sheet. And that's one of the reasons why bankers won't lend to each other, because nobody knows who's in trouble, and no one will admit that they are in trouble. And so you've got the situation where there's a lot of losses there, but we won't know how much they are until they get exposed. I know that E-Trade had to sell their junk bonds, their CDOs, which were $3.1 billion worth. They sold them today at rates between 11 cents and 25 cents on the dollar. And we'll just take 25 as a handle, which means the bonds that are being held by others, now that there's major trades been made, will have to be marked down to that level. Well, that means that Citigroup is offside, I don't know, $40 billion, and Merrill Lynch $12 billion, and on and on and on. These losses are staggering. And there's lots more in other companies and other banks and throughout the world. I mean, this is one of the biggest financial scams of all time.
I certainly agree with you, and I think that people are much more concerned. The financial leaders of our country are much more concerned, but they don't want the American people or the people throughout the rest of the world to know. But the whole world banking system is on the verge, literally, of collapse. And of course, on top of the CDOs and the all of these loans that have been made, poor loans, you've got the rising gasoline, rising oil prices, which has a devastating effect. There's nothing they can do about it. You've got the rising food prices, and there's nothing you can do about it. And old William McChesney Martin, who was the head of the Federal Reserve Board many years ago, said, you know, the purpose of the Federal Reserve Board is to take away the punch bowl just when the party gets interesting. In other words, when you're beginning to get all the benefits of inflation and everybody's prosperous, you've got to take away the punch bowl. You've got to shut this down or it'll get out of hand. And nobody has the courage to take away the punch bowl and spoil the party. Oh, would you agree?
I agree completely. The ramifications are enormous.
And so they've abandoned any sort of restraint, and they're in the process, instead of raising interest rates, as they should do, of lowering interest rates and making more money available here in the United States with the Federal Reserve System, which ensures the ultimate destruction of our currency. And when are they going to get back to doing what is right and taking away the punch bowl? I think they're just putting in more punch all the time. And we're going to have a great party, ladies and gentlemen, but when the party's over, why, an awful lot of people are going to have an awful, a long headache They're going to have an awful hangover. We'll be back in just a moment with our good friend, Bob Chapman. Okay, Bob, you go ahead and pick the story up there. Go right ahead.
Right. How is this going to affect people? Well, credit is going to start tightening up. It already has. Particularly in the housing market, people who are lenders are extremely particular who they lend to and what interest rates they're charging, which are no longer in tandem with the 10-year U.S. note. Example, that note is around 388, and we're looking at the 30-year fixed mortgage at 609, let's say it's 608. And so you've got 80 points differential, and so if you added the difference between the two, that would be the difference between 6 and 380, and that would be 2.2 points. Usually the spread is 1 to 1 and 3/8, so we'll say 120. And so the mortgage rates are outrageously high in comparison historically with the 10-year U.S. note.
Yeah, but still a 6%.
And so money isn't cheap.
Well, but it's 6% interest. I mean, this is what I was paying, on my mortgages many years ago, 6%. It may be out of kilter with these other interest rates, but 6% is you can live with. It's when you start getting up 7% to 8% where you're really getting into trouble.
Well, the point here is that the rates are 2.2 points higher than they should be. If we go on the historical ratio, the 30-year fixed mortgage should be somewhere around 5%. And so the 30-year fixed mortgage is like 1.1% higher than it should be, and that's a big, big spread. In other words, the lenders don't want to lend. And you're going to see changes in credit card structure. And they're going to be sending out new contracts. And they're going to be telling people that we're going to cut back your line from $5,000 to $3,500. And these are the new rules. And there's going to be
legislation. Hold that for just a moment. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob is simply saying that there are going to be new rules as far as credit cards is concerned, and they're going to begin cutting back on the availability of credit for people, and especially these people who are financing one credit card with another credit card. The banks, the lenders are getting concerned because they don't want to get stuck with large loans that no way they're ever going to get paid off. But before I go on, I want to have Bob tell our listeners how they can get copies of the International Forecaster. Go right ahead, Bob.
Well, the Forecaster is about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. And we publish on Wednesdays and Saturdays by email, around 30 pages each time. And we also have a hard copy that goes out twice a month as well. And if you'd like to go to our site on the Internet and see what we've got up there, that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. theinternational.com. If you'd like to email us because you got a question, then that address is international_forecaster@yahoo.com. international_forecaster@yahoo.com. And if you'd like to call toll-free, you can get a copy by going to the site, but you can also call toll-free to 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. And you can get either copy from there as well. And you won't be disappointed.
All right, fine. Well, certainly they've been driving the price of gold and silver down here in the last week to 10 days after they were ready. Gold was approaching $835 an ounce, and silver was getting pretty close to $15, and then suddenly they just pulled the rug out from underneath them. What are they really doing with the commodities? Are they really manipulating all these commodities for their own benefit?
Well, they certainly are, and they have been for a long time. And that will continue until we have changes within government. The Working Group Financial Markets Executive Order was signed in August of 88 by President Reagan, who believed that we needed something in an emergency. The problem is the U.S. Treasury and the Federal Reserve have abused it by taking the executive order and entering into markets 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that's not what it was intended for. It was intended for emergencies. And so this is how these proto-fascists are running the markets. And, of course, they're always on the right side of the market, and they make, you know, fortune each time markets swing, and they know which way it's going to go because they're making it go that way. And so the criminality is beyond belief. If the American people understood what's being done in the markets, they'd revolt. I mean, John Crudell at the New York Post a year and a half ago asked for the minutes of the meetings of the Working Group in Financial Markets. It took them a year and a half after much, much pressure to get an answer. He got 177 pages, of which 85% had been redacted. And when he asked them for the meeting's minutes, they told him they didn't exist.
Now, this is the kind of this is the minutes of the Working Group on Financial Matters, also known as the Plunge Protection Team, which is manipulating the stock market. Is that right?
Yes, the stock and the commodity markets and anything that they feel is necessary to manipulate either for political, social, economic, political reasons, or just for pure profit.
And so if you don't know what's going to happen, you're going to get into these markets and you're going to get whipsawed. They know what's going to happen, and they use this information for their own benefit. And who are you going to complain about? I mean, when you see that market go up 300 points, you know, in one day, and then the next day go up another 300 points, and all of the stocks on all of the markets go up, or just about, I mean, 95% of them. You know this whole thing is being manipulated. And especially when this happens usually in the last 30 minutes of a day, or when they've been down all day and then suddenly they turn and start going up. Amazing. No, it's not amazing at all. It's simply what the Plunge Protection Team does to benefit themselves and to create this perception everything's fine. And what they're doing is playing games with our minds. Would you agree with that, Bob?
Absolutely. And every time I see these young people go off to war, I get sick. You know, there's no rhyme or reason for them to have to do that. And I'm not against war. I'm against having wars for profit. And quite frankly, that's all we've had for a long time, at least the last 100 years. And it's got to stop. And one of the ways that that can be accomplished is per my recommendations earlier in the program, and that is wiping out the incumbents in office in the primaries and electing Ron Paul. Ron Paul understands all of the things we're talking about. He's really the only man out of that whole group of people who's fit for office. I mean, he knows more than any of them about government. about finance, about economics. And he's the perfect president for the perfect time. He knows what to do and how to solve the problems. And he knows what changes have to be made. And we've got to make those changes. If we don't, we're going to be living under the hill, the heel of somebody else. I mean, if Bush is gone, are we going to have a Huckabee or a Giuliani or an Obama or a Hillary or Edwards? I mean, they're all bought and paid for. Every single... one of them is bought and paid for. And don't think that they're not. They are.
Okay, fine. Well, let's just, of course, get back then to what is happening on the financial markets and what people should be doing to protect themselves. How have they been able to drive the price of gold and the price of silver down so effectively here this last 10 days?
Well, I think most of it's the gold. Is being driven down in the last few weeks, not by shorting, but by physical sales and sales from leasing, which is the same as a physical sale in the final analysis. And they've been hitting the market. I mean, the European Central Bank last week sold 42 tons of gold. I mean, they don't have 15% backing in there. Currency, the euro anymore. What they've got is probably less than 10%. We don't know because they won't tell us. You know, more of this government or central bank's secrecy.
Well, I understand the Russians are actually increasing their gold holdings. They want gold behind their currency.
Well, that's correct. That's true. And they're continuing to accumulate. They've got a lot of currencies there, and I'm sure that they're anxious to get rid of the dollars at least. And the Russian economy has done well because they've had oil and gas and other commodities which have gone up in value and made their job pretty easy. But you still got to manage it properly. And I think Russia was a country waiting to be successful. There's a lot of enormously bright people there. If left to themselves, they can make their economy over into something very desirable. And I think they're on the way to doing that. Of course, this oil and gas particularly has really helped. And I think Mr. Putin has been the right man for Russia. He's leaving his office shortly, even though the party that he was with established a stupendous victory. I think they got 64 or 69% of the vote. So Russia's in very good shape. And that brings up another thing. If NATO moves on the Serbs in Kosovo, Russia can just turn the spigot off on natural gas to Western Europe, and they transport 35% of all the natural gas in Western Europe, and that's going to cause quite a problem. The price will go up from wherever they get it, and the air conditioners won't be working in the summer, and the heat won't be working in the winter. And so, I mean, that sort of sanction could be the first step by Russia. They could say, look, you know, we're back in Serbia. What you're doing is wrong. We want those troops out of there. And if they don't move, we'll turn in the spigot off. It's as simple as that. So there's a lot of things going to be happening in regard to Russia and their finances. And for the most part, they'll probably be good.
Well, you know, Chris, I can remember when they were building these pipelines to Western Europe. And I was saying, why is Western Europe allowing themselves to become dependent upon You know, oil, specifically natural gas, but now increasingly oil, from Russia. Why would the leaders of Western Europe make themselves dependent on a commodity from a potential enemy? And if we ever to have a war, they could turn that off and totally disrupt the economy of Western Europe, which is dependent on Russian natural gas. Doesn't make sense unless, so there has to be another explanation. And of course, as we pointed out, certainly in recent years, American corporations, American oil companies, the American Export-Import Bank, the American World Bank and International Monetary Fund, the American Asian Development Bank have been building up drilling the oil wells and the gas wells for the Russians, creating the best enemy money could buy. None of this makes sense unless there's another agenda out there. When you know that agenda, then, of course, everything makes sense.
And that's why we have this program.
Right. Well, that's why I do what I do 5 hours a day, and why we've written something called the Communist Capitalist Alliance. I hope every one of you want to get it. It's very inexpensive, but it will explain to you and document the fact for you that we have created the best enemy money could buy. We did it knowingly and purposely. Well, at first, the American people didn't understand that their tax money was being used to build up Russia. We are the greatest debtor nation in the world, and Russia now has the largest reserves in the world, thanks to good old Uncle Sam. Well, Bob, what's the next step as far as gold and silver? Do you think they're going to continue going up? Do you think this is just a lull in their process of the rising prices?
No, I think it's a lull. It's just an interlude. You buy this gold and silver market because in over a period of time, it's going to go considerably higher. Sometimes different sections of it will lag. There's not a lot of interest from the public because they don't know what's happening. And there will be interest once the stock market goes down because not only the public but mostly professionals will be looking for a place to invest and make money during a time when markets are going down. And they've already begun in part going down, and I expect soon that the downside on the market will accelerate. And when that happens, the pros will say, well, let's go buy some gold, or let's go buy some gold stocks where we can make some money doing that. And so it'll come about. You just have to be patient and wait. And the people who have waited since the year 2000 have done very, very well. We bought Agnico Eagle at $4 and got up as high as 60. And there's others like that, some of them even more spectacular. And, you know, numismatic coins are starting to really move. And I think that they'll do well. And, of course, I believe bullion coins of both silver and gold will do well. I think people should own them. You don't fight a bull market. Why bother? I mean, you just buy what's going up. What do you care? I mean, you're there to make money. You're gambling. There's no way to enter the stock market conservatively. Everything in the stock and bond market is gambling. There's just no two ways about it. Some gambling is more dangerous than others. That's about it.
All right, well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Barry Shamish, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Barry Shamish, well, I would love to know what you are thinking out there. Now, of course, the question then comes up as to, you know, there are a lot of people here on fixed incomes, and we have inflation. The government insists we don't, but they're obviously not telling the truth. What's going to happen to these people on fixed incomes or options as time goes by? And are a lot of our pension funds in danger of being destroyed before this thing is over?
Well, I think the stock market's going to get down 50% easy. And that means your stocks are going to go down 50% in your pension fund, which means what you get paid could be cut in half. That's for openers. And who knows, it could be a lot worse. And, you know, I've been telling people who are in the market to get out at least 50% of what you have and put that money in gold and silver assets. And if you get too much money and you don't want to put it in all in there, then you can go buy some Swiss franc government bonds that will, from a currency standpoint, will hold together better than anything else out there. You know, I really don't have any other recommendations because I believe that the choices are that limited.
Well, there's some people who say we ought to be an American Treasury bond. What do you say to the people who say, well, I'm going to get into T-bonds?
What was that?
What about the people who say we're going to get into T-bonds?
Well, T-bonds are treasury bonds, and I don't recommend that with the dollar going down.
All right. Okay, fine. Well, our guest, of course, has been Bob Chapin. And we've been talking to him about what's going on financially. We'll certainly look forward to having Bob with us again next week. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Hang on there, Bob. Well, Bob, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, thank you very much. All by my onesies. Well, you know, you can continue to gamble in the market, but I really don't advise it. In fact, I don't advise any kind of gambling, and, you know, with the exception of what I mentioned, I just think it's too dangerous. I mean, I had a conversation with a couple today, and one of them wanted to reverse mortgage his house, and I said, no, I don't think you should do that. It's fully paid for. And I said, you know, you've got a bunch of gold and silver coins and shares now. If you want to take a new loan for $100,000 on your house, that's okay. And one of them said to me, well, how, suppose we can't make the payments? Well, you can sell some of your gold stock or some of your gold coins to make the payments. So you're not going to have a problem with that. And the house is worth $1.2 million. And so that's a conservative withdrawal. But, you know, I wouldn't go any further than that. You know, if Fannie and Freddie go under, and they're holding 40% of the mortgages, they're holding about 55% of the garbage, too, within that structure. And they got to be nationalized by the United States government, and a number of banks get nationalized, there's not going to be any, unless this government guarantees, there's not going to be any gains in housing for years. So that means the $1 million home that goes to $500,000 will probably stay there for some time to come. And the $200,000 home that goes down to $120,000, that's probably going to stay there for some time to come. Because lenders are not going to risk their money without any guarantees from the federal government. Otherwise, it's 25 or 30% down, and you're going to have good credit, you're not going to be able to buy a house. And you know something? All during the 50s and 60s and 70s, and even into the early 80s, you had to put down 20% minimum. So this is nothing new. It's just that all the Americans are broke.
Well, our guest has been Bob Chapin. We're talking about the finances. And his advice to you is, well, we're in very, very serious problems financially. We're not being told the truth. Inflation is rampant. Bye, Bob. Bob, we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I certainly want our listeners to know that I appreciate very much their expressions of concern about my health, and as you know, I did have to have open heart surgery, but I'm doing well. Right now, however, we would appreciate if people did not call the answering service to ask about our health or wish us well, because, of course, the answering service takes emergency and physicians' calls, and because we've had so many people calling in, wishing us well or inquiring about our health, we've actually put the answering service into a difficult situation. So thank you very much for your expressions of concern, but please do not call in and ask about our health. Oh, we're healthy, we're getting better, but it'll take a little while before we're back to 100%. But we are working full-time now, trying to educate people out across America that behind everything going on today are powerful spiritual forces directing the course of human affairs. Well, if you want to know about money, let me suggest a pamphlet called What You Should Know About Money. It's something based upon the newsletters we've written. Then my talk on the financial tsunami and the syllabus that goes with that, which gives you a pretty good idea of how all of the very financial matters fit together. Certainly the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, the book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, and the book, of Fiat Money Inflation in France. If you want to know more about these items, the telephone number to call would be 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And certainly we'll the girls there can tell you how to get these books. You need to understand what's going on now to be able to protect yourself and your future. Many of the pension funds are going down because they have actually invested in these collateralized debt obligations, which they never should have. And many of the large financial institutions are going down as well. And when they tell you everything is in good shape, they're just not telling you the truth. America is the greatest debtor nation in the world today. Our real debt, not what they tell you, but our real debt, according to David Walker of the General Accounting Office, is over $50 trillion. There is no way 10 or 15 years from now that we'll be able to meet our obligations. And actually starting the first of next year, many of the baby boomers are going to begin to retire at 62 because they want to get their money out, because they know Social Security is insolvent. There is no Social Security fund. There is no Medicare fund. And when they tell you there is, they're simply lying. But that isn't that what governments have always done to their people? And, of course, do you know a better way to impoverish the people than to transfer their wealth to other nations and destroy the value of their currency? And that is just exactly what they are intentionally doing in the United States today. So remember our telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, our webpage is radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our programs live 9 hours a day, or at least 4 hours a day live, and a 9 hour a day live feed to Telstar 5. And then, of course, you can watch our videos, many of them there. You can read our newsletters, get the information, and help us disseminate it. Help others to begin listening to our programs and beginning to understand the other dimension. The fact that there really are secret organizations out there. If you've not yet watched our talk on the forbidden secret, that's the forbidden secret. You need to get it, and you need to watch it, and you need to understand it. If you want to understand the secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years, why, of course, the four-tape or four-CD set, The Secret Behind the Secret, to understand the societies that were here when America was created, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. Again, our number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, and then please pray for America, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Before we get into this the next hour, I want to tell you that I truly appreciate the fact that many of you have called our answering service to express your concern for my health and recovery, but please don't call the answering service because it's an emergency answering service and they take emergency calls for doctors and for ambulances and when you call in there sometimes they get have been getting so many calls of people explaining that, you know, wishing as well that they've blocked the ability of the answering service to look after the lives and safety of people. So we appreciate your concern, we appreciate your calls, but please do not call our answering service. Drop us a note. And to all those who have dropped us notes, I want you to know how much I appreciate your concern about our health. Well, for this next hour, we're going to have with us our good friend Barry Shamus, who is an Israeli patriot, who's for many years been telling the Israeli people that Rabin, the Prime Minister of Israel, was assassinated by the Israeli government. And, of course, this is not the only assassination by the Israeli government. And that the Israeli government, certainly Mr. Olmert and Barak today, were under the control of the American Council on Foreign Relations, that Peres seems to be strongly under the influence of the Vatican. And Barry believes that there are, working within the Jewish community, agents of the Sabbatean movement. There's a Sabbatean movement, and you can look it up in the Internet. Nobody else will talk about this, but this is a clique of Judaism that hates Judaism. People who profess to be Jews but are not. It's not imaginary. It's very real. Rabbi Edelman has written about this in the past. You can go to the Encyclopedia Britannica and look up the Sabbateans and Sabbati and this whole movement, which I think many people today mistake to be Zionism and the force which is running the world. Well, I believe, of course, that they are part of the secret societies. There are many secret societies out there, but the Sabbateans work as a secret society with the other secret societies in conjunction with the CFR, and their goal is not the preservation, but the destruction of Israel and the Jewish people. And with that as a background, Barry, pick up the story.
Yeah, well, I think they're going to get their way. Olmert, after Annapolis, went on CNN and had a little press conference and told the BBC that if Israel doesn't accept a two-state solution, it's finished. No more Israel. And, I mean, this is the Prime Minister of Israel, my goodness. Now, he didn't write that line. That line was given to him, and he was forced to say it. You can always tell when an Israeli politician is just mouthing the words of Condoleezza Rice and Bush. They give him stuff to say, and they say it. That point of view is held in Israel only by the far, far left. The Israeli people, all the polls show that they are not far, far left in any respect. And they're getting the far, far left, whether they like it or not. They're getting anti-Semitic diplomacy of the worst kind. And the worst kind, we're going to talk about, first of all, a leak, a major leak that came out this week. It seems the American ambassador to Tel Aviv, one Richard Jones, I hear the music. Well, I guess we'll hear what Richard Jones told our Attorney General in a few seconds then.
All right, fine. We'll be back in just a moment. Apparently, the American ambassador to Israel was giving orders to the people in Israel. Now, where does the American ambassador get off? I thought that those Zionists were running our State Department. Don't believe that for 1 minute. I mean, we, the people in our State Department, are intent upon the destruction of Israel, and they're doing everything they can to ensure it takes place. We'll be back in just a moment with Barry. Go right ahead, Barry.
Well, he showed up to our Attorney General's office. Now, her name is Dorit Bainish, and she's a nasty, nasty piece of work, and I'll talk about that shortly. But someone in that office, I doubt it was Bainish. It took too much honesty to leak what Jones told her. It might have been just a secretary, a translator, whoever's in there, it leaked out. Richard Jones, your ambassador, ordered her, now get this because it's unbelievable, that any Jew who opposes the Bush CFR, and by the way, the Vatican as well, in a big way, but if he opposes the diplomacy going on in Israel leading to a two-state solution, which means no Israel, by the way. Two-state means no Israel. Well, they're criminals, and they're to be treated as criminals, no matter how law-abiding they are, no matter how they were not responsible for a crime. In every case, you support the Arabs, no matter what atrocities they commit, and you charge the Jews, and you put them in jail for nothing, and you make their lives a complete misery. This was an order from the American government. If you can believe this, that the Jewish residents of Yesha was Judea, Samaria, Gaza. They've still left the Gaza on there, but it's Judea and Samaria today, are to be criminalized. And these, by the way, are very honest, decent people. And, well, they're going to be criminalized. No matter what the incident, the order has come from the American ambassador to our attorney general to criminalize anyone who stands in the way of this bulldozer, what's known as the roadmap or the dastardly Oslo Accords. They're criminals.
And, of course, basically you're talking about 250,000 people?
Yeah, 250,000, but it's more than that because there are so many Israelis who are live in what is known as inside the Green Line, who agree that Israel is, in fact, committing suicide. They're also to be criminalized. And now, Dorit Bainish, our Attorney General, is a real piece of work. Look, you talk to an honest Attorney General, and you give an order that's against all judicial and ethical laws that supposedly our societies are based on.
Hold on, I will be right back here with Barry. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and what Barry is basically saying is that the American ambassador to Israel went to see the Israeli Attorney General and ordered her that to criminalize any of the Jews who oppose this idea of turning Judea and Samaria over to the Arabs. They've already turned Gaza over to the Arabs, and we saw what a great success that was. But now anybody who objects to the American policy being imposed upon Israel is to be criminalized, and the Israeli government is to take a criminal action against Israelis who disagree with the policy of really turning Judea and Samaria over to the Arabs. Now, this is not going to solve the problem, because there are certainly many Arabs, if they gave the entire nation of Israel, to the Arabs, they still wouldn't be happy. They would simply insist on driving the Jews out of the country. They hate the Jews. This is what it's really all about, and no amount of concessions is going to make one iota of difference. So why is the American government, represented by the American ambassador, demanding that Israelis who don't want to go along with the American agenda would be considered to be criminals? You pick up the story there, Barry, because
well,
I think that's very important.
Attorney General would just tell them to go suck eggs. I guess she got her way by leaking this story. And this story, it's one of the most significant leaks to come out of the Israeli government, and I assume, well, as I said, Dorit Bainish, as the source of the leak, is a little hard to believe. Her husband is an arms runner. He actually, it's an amazing story in a way. He actually ran arms to Croatia with someone named Izzy Kelman, who was actually my boss. He was the editor of the Israel Economist, and Banish's husband ran arms to Croatia with Izzy Kelman. And this is, again, known throughout Israel, but what Dorit Banish did that made her famous when she was prosecutor, during the Rabin assassination, she tore up, I think it was 15 files against someone named Avishai Raviv. He was the best friend of the patsy sitting in jail for Raviv's murder, Yigal Amir. She is a nasty, horrible piece of work. There is no describing what a true blue cow this woman is, but what Jones did, I guess, was so deeply offensive to the Israeli government and even to Banish. Somehow, even Carolyn Glick of the Jerusalem Post, a very conservative writer, let this out, let this horrible ultimatum by Jones out.
Well, now, Chris, what was the response of the Israeli people? I mean, certainly, I think everybody in the United States would be quite incensed if another country came to our Attorney General and ordered that a certain activity be criminalized.
Well, your Attorney General is doing that. He doesn't need any help or encouragement.
Right.
But I guess someone had to remind Israel to start being even super anti-democratic, as if anyone running Israel needs that reminder. But I guess when you're committing suicide, you have to press the people a little bit harder. Now, this week, I'm going to go to Israeli subjects that are really the talk of Israel, and they're unknown in Israel, in America, I'm sorry. I wrote a very long piece. Basically, I put together a lot of information that I was going to use for stories, and I just said, I'm tired of banging my head against the wall. I'm taking a little vacation. And it's a deserved vacation, because Israel is going down so quickly, and there's nothing I can do, really, to stop it. Writing, the pen is not mightier than the sword. The sword is much stronger than a pen. And there are a lot of platitudes out there that people believe, and that's one of them. There's one in Hebrew that says a lie doesn't have 4 feet, and don't even try and figure that one out. The fact is, lies have 4 feet in Israel as well. Now, I wrote about the murder of someone named Ido Zoltan. Now, he was, Zoltan was the head of the Save Chomish. Chomish was one of the four towns destroyed by the Israeli army as part of the Gush Katif or Gaza pullout. And beautiful homes and really strategic beyond belief. If you won't get a chance. I was going to say if you ever get a chance, you won't. But I was up there, and the view of all of the coastal plain of Israel from these cities is now in Arab hands right now, but it will be. And the Jews of that time held very important high hills. And Chomish was one of them. And Ido Zoltan was trying to get his home. He was living in Chomish, resettled, and there was going to be a conference a few days after he was murdered. His father was a leading contractor in the Asia. They were going to rebuild Chomish. And I wrote that the scenario is the following, that the members of the Fatah, which is the PLO, were told when and which car to shoot at, and when they're caught, they're going to be allies of Mahmoud Abbas. And I said it won't make a difference because these people got their basic information from the Israeli so-called secret government, the Israeli Secret Service, the Shabak, whoever is really running the show, whoever hates religion and hates, despises the residents of Judea and Samaria and are promoting this so-called peace and are promoting the end of Israel, they gave the information to Fatah. And Fatah killed Zoltan. And I said this has been going on all year long, nonstop. And this is something that I'm a personal victim of this. I mean, I'm not writing this out of the clear blue sky. My car was sabotaged, and I survived by a miracle. This guy didn't. And lo and behold, we find out yesterday that they kept it a secret because they didn't want to ruin Annapolis, that they arrested three Fatah policemen. These are the very same policemen that we have been arming and funding, and they killed Zoltan. Now, these are your standard patsies. They don't know why. They don't know who gave the order. It came from above them. Nonetheless, it turned out exactly as I wrote, that the Fatah killed Zoltan because Fatah works with the Israelis. Well, why do you think Abbas is still going to Annapolis? The guy doesn't control the front steps on the stoop outside his little villa. Nobody feels that he's their leader, and yet he is working hand in hand with the Israelis. And I wrote, and I said it straight out, and I gave examples of this. The Shabak worked with Fatah. Shimon Peres works with Fatah. They kill Jews. They've been doing it for a year. No, it's longer than a year, but this year was especially bad as the end comes. And lo and behold, people are writing me today, you got another one right, how did you know, and so on and so forth. How I knew is very simple. I know what the system is. I know what Fatah is. I know what the Israeli Shabak and the Secret Services are. And they killed Ido Zoltan. It was not a random murder.
All right, and Christopher, the Shabbat, of course, is the Israeli counterpart, would more like the FBI or like
yeah,
the CIA?
Yeah, FBI Secret Service.
Right.
They also guard our politicians. Now, I'm going to add something. After the announcement is made, now, what would Omer do when you find out that Fatah killed a Jew in cold blood? Well, naturally, same day, same announcement. As soon as he finds out who really did the murder, I mean, he's known for 2 weeks, but nonetheless, he releases 429, almost all Fatah prisoners. Now, that's going to teach them. Now, what this involves...
Now, these are terrorists he's releasing, aren't they?
Of course they are. And these are bloodthirsty men who will go back into action, and we'll be fighting against them in no time. In a split second, we'll be fighting against them. But Olmert, look, it was a payoff. Fatah's got to kill Jews every now and then. It's competing with Hamas. Hamas, by the way, here's a statistic for you. Up until now, it's been 330 days of the year have passed. 1,629 rockets and mortars have been launched on Israel. That's one every three hours. No, wait a second, 300 days, 1,600. It's plenty of missiles every day. Four or five every single day have been launched on Israel. Oh, I hear that music again.
All right, we're going to be back in just a moment with Barry Shamash. And of course, Barry's right. I mean, Israel is under attack. One of the sources of a lot of those rockets is Gaza, which the Israeli government took away from the Israeli patriots who lived there and gave to to Hamas so they could use it as a base for raining missiles down on Israel. Go right ahead.
Now, I'm going to go into the second announcement today. They, amazing day, really a very busy day. They had a trial about this, one of the three murderers, so-called murderers, of the tourist minister, Rehavam Ze'evi. Now, one of these days, I'd like to do a whole show on this murder. It's just as good as Rabin, with just enough proof to keep you nice and busy. You'll enjoy it very much. Now, I'm going to do it in sort of like a Cliff Note fashion. Rehavam Ze'evi was the leader of the Israeli right wing at the time. He had a party inside Sharon's government, and he discovered something that forced him to demand. It was an ultimatum. He gave Sharon an ultimatum. He told Sharon, you either get rid of Shimon Peres, or I'm getting out of this government. I'm taking two other parties with me, Benny Alon and Avigdor Lieberman. We're going to leave the Knesset, leave Sharon with a minority government, unless he got rid of Peres.
Now, this was about what, 2001? Okay, go ahead.
Now, Ze'evi was an enormously, well, popular, but he was a patriot. Now, don't ask if he was a good guy or bad. If you're in the Israeli government, right or left, you're bad. It just comes with the territory. And he had a nasty, he had a pretty nasty background, which, again, one of these days, maybe we'll do a show about Ze'evi. Nonetheless, he was in the right. He wanted Israel not to go down the drain. Now, here's what he found out. And I had, before we go to the verdict and so forth that came out today, I had a couple of sources who I'm going to reveal. The next story is in my book, Bye-Bye Gaza, with just... Contact one or contact or informant one, informant two. They asked me not to reveal their name. It's been 6 years, and I think we're now safe in saying that informant one was David Bedin. In Israel, he's known certainly to the English speaking community. He has he runs the Israel Media Resource Agency. And he's the reporter for the Philadelphia Bulletin. And with him was an attorney, Jack Goldberg. And I was at a rally selling books, as usual, outside the American Consulate in Jerusalem. They asked me to step away from my little table and told me, David just told me outright, said, everything you've been writing about Paris and the Vatican and the Sabbateans, he said, the whole work is, all the works apparently are right. He said, here's what happened to Ze'evi. He was given a major hint by someone named Jonathan Stern, whose father, Sheldon Stern, works at the think tank, the Washington for Middle Eastern Peace. The Washington something for Middle East peace. Leave it at that till it hits me. And it's run by Martin Indyk. Now, Indyk is a real, real character himself. He comes from Australia, and suddenly he's given a multi-million-dollar think time.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back there.
For Middle East peace.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is telling us about back some years ago, he was actually contacted about the murder of a very, very prominent conservative Jewish leader in 2001. And the people were basically telling him that they agreed with the fact that, you know, Barry believes that there's this Sabbatean influence within Jewish government, within the Israeli government, that they had actually killed Rabin, the story we have of Rabin's assassination. It's just like the story we have about Kennedy's assassination, totally fraudulent. You can't let the American people realize that the CIA and the FBI conspired along with the military to kill Kennedy any more than you can let the Israeli people understand that the Shabbat actually killed Rabin. But go ahead, pick the story up there.
Well, I would include the mafia in JFK's murder.
You're absolutely right, of course. But then the mafia has worked with the CIA for years.
We'll get lost if we do this. But the same sort of version, except our mafia is our president today, Shimon Peres, is our mafia. And they told me the story that Zevi was contacted by, I think it was Jonathan Stern of the Washington Institute for Middle Eastern Peace. And he was going to give Zevi, for a lot of money, by the way, the figure I was given was $900,000. They were going to give him the whole file on Peres. Peres was working with Indic through someone named Nimrod Novik. He was Peres' liaison inside the institute. And they were planning the whole, according to David, the whole thing. The Vatican gets the holy sites, Jerusalem is divided, Israel goes to the 48 borders, the whole thing they were planning. And Stern claimed he was a patriot and that he wanted the truth to come out. And Zevi was offered the whole file for $900,000, which he accepted. He raised the money and he was negotiating with them. Now, the way it was told to me is that Stern got scared or greedy, but the price kept going up. He needed another $30,000 to keep the guards quiet and so on and so forth until Zevi said enough is enough and backed out of the whole deal. But he returned to Sharon and said, the information I've got on Peres is so flabbergastingly awful that I'm going to give you 3 days to get rid of him. He either leaves the government or I do, and I'm not leaving alone. Now, Sharon offered Zevi a little compromise, a phony compromise. He banned Peres from meeting Arafat in Greece, some sort of meeting, and Zevi showed off this telegram he got from Sharon, but he knew Sharon was bluffing. And on the last day of the ultimatum, he gave part of his speech to Arut Sheva, at the time Israel National News Today. And the next morning, now, one of these days we'll do the show how the Arabs got him and how the bodyguards weren't there. And we'll talk about someone named Israel Eitan, who was part of the murder itself. We'll talk about all of that if you'd like. The point of the matter is there were no bodyguards on the eighth floor where his room was and where the highest ranks of Israeli security establishment were staying, and he was shot dead. He was shot dead under orders from Shimon Peres. Now, the shooter, and it's a long story, the three shooters were actually imprisoned in Jericho, with American and British guards 24 hours a day. The government was so afraid they'd open their mouth. And after Arafat was killed, they did start opening their mouths, and Israel attacked Jericho, if you can believe this, attacked the jail and took him out of jail and said they'd put him on trial. So this was the week that the verdict came in on the trial of one of the shooters. He was given 100 years. Now, what he said, of course, made perfect sense, that he received the order to kill Zevi from his commander in the PFLP, that's the Front for the Liberation of Palestine, and that's all he knows.
All right. And when was this trial? Was that a recent trial?
Well, the verdict was today, yesterday.
Just yesterday. So he said that he was just carrying out orders that had come from above.
Again, but that's how you set up a patsy.
Sure.
You keep them compartmentalized. The only person they know about is the person right above them, and that's that. That's how you keep a conspiracy a secret.
And the question is, of course, who really gave the orders? And everything suggests that the orders really did come all the way from Sharon himself, doesn't it?
No, they came from Peres.
He came from Peres, okay. We're going to be back in just a moment here with Barry Shamish as we're looking at what's going on in Israel today. All right, Dr. Stan, our guest, Barry Shamish, and go right ahead with the story there, Barry.
Well, I guess that's pretty well the story that the Israeli peacemakers, ultimately led by Peres, the president of Israel, Olmert is just, Olmert would not be prime minister if Peres didn't have tea with Ariel Sharon, and then Sharon has a stroke half an hour later. And one of these days we can actually go over the evidence on that one too. But it's in my book, Bye Bye Gaza. All of this stuff is in there. I mean, really. If anyone wants to read the book, here's how you get it. You go to Lulu, that's www.lulu.com. Lulu.com. It says search. You write in my name, Chamish, Chamish, and you'll get my books, about nine of them, I believe. But Bye Bye Gaz is what we're talking about today. And what can I say? I highly recommend you read it. Now, the next issue is so serious and so deadly and dangerous, and again, no one's talking about it. And that is the fact that Israel once had a very loyal sect to the Jewish state, the Druze. And the Druze go where the wind blows, and they now feel the wind is blowing against Israel, that Israel is going. And they have become a fifth column in the state, and that fifth column joins the army. At least it used to. The kids today are just as radical as any Arab kid in Gaza are now these Druze kids. And they used to, when Israel was strong, they were proud Israelis. Now that Israel is clearly done, and they know it, they've become suddenly proud Arab nationalists. Now, the Arabs don't think Druze are in any way Arab. They're a strange sect with their own secret rites, and there is a lot of revenge out for the Druze, because the Druze have been viciously anti-Arab with the Israeli army for all these many years, and I guess they're trying to make amends. Now, the amend happened in a city called Pekin. Pekin, actually, in Hebrew.
Oh, hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about the Druze.
Excuse me?
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry was talking about the Druze. Now, the Druze are a sect. They're actually a secret sect. Some people consider them almost like a secret society. They're not Arab. They're not Jewish. They live in the northern part of Israel, over towards the Golan Heights, and of course they serve in the army. They've been very, very effective soldiers. The whole group, it's not just occasional Arab who might join the Israeli army, but the Druze as a whole have always been very supportive of the Israelis, and suddenly that is changing. So before we go on, though, I want you once more to tell our listeners how they get your books, and then I want you to tell us about the Druze and the problem that they're raised as far as Israel is concerned. But once again, how can people get your books or get the DVDs that you have?
Well, the books, again, go to lulu.com and write my name where it says search, Chamish, and you'll see my books. My website is thebarrychamishwebsite.com, but if you write www.barrychamish.com, you'll get there. And I have a lot, four or five DVDs that Lulu doesn't carry, and I'll leave my cell number. So far, I've met some very decent people doing this, so unlike your switchboard, which is getting clogged with well-wishers, I'm going to give the opposite message. You can phone me. 904-501-7605. That's 904-501-7605. And, amongst the DVDs are the Vatican's new crusade against Jerusalem, and preventing the new Israeli Holocaust, which I recorded in Denver a few months ago. Now we go back to the Druze. Something happened about a month and a half ago that is being really hidden, excuse me, really hidden by the Israeli media. And it's so devastating to the country. There has been a Jewish population in the town of Pekin for endless generations. It's a Kabbalistic town, and Pekin was a proud center of Kabbalism in the finest sense of the word in Israel. And there weren't a lot of families, but they were very honored families. And a month and a half ago, there was suddenly a riot where the Jewish homes were burnt. And this is in Israel. Okay, and then the police came in and they were attacked by the Jews. Hundreds of them. And the police were actually they scared the Israeli police, and there have been no convictions. Nothing. No charges. Nothing. The Israelis backed away from this phony. It was supposedly over a cell phone tower. It wasn't. It was a riot aimed at driving the Jews out of Pekin. Now this, well, again, unless you're following Israel and the state of Israeli affairs, I guess this doesn't matter. But it very, very much matters in Israel, because you've got a new fifth column. And you've got a dangerous fifth column. These are very, very strong fighters. They were in the front lines in the Intifada. And they were put there because they hated the Arabs so much, and they showed no mercy. Well, it doesn't matter, because Arabs don't even know what the word mercy means. But nonetheless, you don't want them hating Jews. And yesterday was, 2 days ago, was the last family, a 90-year-old woman who was respected by the town for three generations of her own life. Her car was burnt, her courtyard attacked. She was the last Jew who left Pekin. It is now Judenrein. It no longer has Jews in it. This is happening in Israel. Israel is now going down so quickly, there are no words to describe really what a nation will do when it simply doesn't want to live anymore. This right now means that Israel no longer has two enemies, the Arabs of Hamas and, well, you know what, all Arabs, forget that. Israel now has two enemies. It has the Arabs and it has the Druze. And the Druze know that Syria is going to win. That's the real problem, because they've got family on the other side of the Golan Heights in Syria. And for years they've been very fiercely loyal to Israel. And now they don't want to be loyal to Israel anymore, because they smell it in the wind. They know that Israel is going to be pressed. If Israel doesn't go to war with Syria, Israel will be diplomatically forced to withdraw from the Golan Heights. 60 years of decency is now all broken down. Israel right now is standing all by itself, from without and from within. As a nation, it just won't last much longer. I think people have to understand that the forces of now are just out to get Israel in the worst way. And, you know, you can talk about the Condoleezza Rices and George Bushes and hate them and not understand them, but unless you understand where they come from, unless you understand that Rice comes from the CFR, unless you understand that she was educated by Madeleine Albright's father at the University of Colorado, unless you follow all these things, you don't understand. It doesn't matter how screwed up she is, or it doesn't matter if she believes the Palestinians are the same as the American blacks, and she supports them because they're just like American blood. All that's nonsense. The core of the matter is the order is coming from on high, and Israel is going to collapse because there are people in your country who want Israel to collapse. Now, the next issue that I should relate to is something I wrote again in the last send-up. And people, you go to my website to read it. Go to the articles section of BarryChalmers.com, and you'll read a very long article. I'm not going to be writing again for at least a month unless something comes up that, well, has to be written. I'm just so tired of it all. I wrote a piece. I didn't write the piece. I told her the piece. I wrote a long article filled with articles that I was going to write about separately but never did. And one was half written, by someone named Manfred Lehman. He's dead now. But I met him at the King David Hotel in Jerusalem with my partner then, Joel Bainerman. He was a very proud Jew and a very rich one, I add. He didn't buy into New World Order. He was very proud of his friendship with Kissinger, and that repulsed me to hear that, actually. But nonetheless, he did a survey of the Ottoman Empire and where the so-called Palestinians came from. And I wrote the... I published a précis of his conclusions. In 1880, the Turks took a census where 141,000 Muslims were found in Palestine, which is a lot bigger than Israel, by the way. And they started bringing in, from throughout the Ottoman Empire, they started attracting people with, you know, you don't go into the army, you don't pay taxes. There's ways to get people to move. And the first, they brought in from Bosnia-Herzegovina, the Turks brought in a whole slew of them to live in Israeli cities like Akko and Haifa and Jaffa. And then they started bringing in Circassians to live on the Golan Heights, mostly to stop the banditry of the Bedouins there. Then they brought in Turkmens and Chechens. By 1922, when the British did a census, there were now 650,000 Muslims in Palestine. If you believe this story that they're the long-term residents of Palestine, you're totally and completely wrong. You've got more Bosnia-Herzegovinians in the Haifa than you have Arabs. And this is just something I put in the latest article, so at least there's some perspective on what this fight is all about. It's not between some naturally indigenous people whose land was stolen from them. It has nothing to do with that. Now, not that that's going to do much good, but at least my conscience is clear. Later on, the British started moving Arabs, 30,000 Syrians from the place called Haraun were moved to Haifa. Let me tell you, many people who went to Palestine in the 19th century and saw a desolate, empty land, and some of them were famous, like Mark Twain and Balzac, they all saw no people there. Well, they were right. The Turks, the Ottomans took care of that and resettled the land, and then the British did. But these Palestinians, they never existed, and that's not an exaggeration. 141,000 Muslims in 1882 was about the, well, it was smaller than the number of Jews that lived in Jerusalem, Tiberias, Sfat, Rishon LeZion. It was equal, but one of the reasons the Ottomans also repopulated Palestine was that the Zionist ambitions, they just tried to put a stop to them by making that land so filled with people. No, there was just no room for anyone else. So just a little information for you.
Well, I'm sure this is probably in large part in response to the Balfour Declaration, because it was pretty obvious to the Ottomans at that time that, you know, that they, a lot of Jews were going to be coming there.
No, the Balfour Declaration was in 1917, and the British had already taken Jerusalem by then. No, that one is actually irrelevant. But nonetheless, the issue remains the same, that there was a movement to move back to Israel. Zionism itself was not a movement until the 1890s. This was a different group of Jews. They were called the Bilu. Nonetheless, the Turks had a pretty good idea of what was coming, and they mucked up the situation. But again, the real point is and remains that these are not indigenous natural residents of Palestine. Now, how much time do we have left?
We have about 9 minutes.
Okay. Now, there's one little last issue. I don't know how important it is, but let's bring it up anyway, just for the heck of it. A bunch of rabbis have issued a proclamation to the Bush government that if Israel suffers another a loss of land like Gaza or Gush Katif, that the effect on America would be profound. America would essentially be cursed. Now, I'm going to remind you, I'm not sure if you remember, but I'm going to remind you whether you do or don't, this issue of natural disaster striking every time Israel is in some way affected, I don't buy. I know there are people who just look for any event that happens in Israel in some case. Weather catastrophe or some volcano elsewhere. But Gush Katif was kind of a different story. I remember that evening I wrote an article, and this was like 2 days before Gush Katif was about to be evacuated, if, as I recall.
And I think for our listeners out there, Gush Katif was there in Gaza, and the whole idea was that they, the decision had been made by the Council on Foreign Relations and forced upon Israel that they were going to take these settlers, many of them who'd been there for 20, 30, 40 years, and force them, all the Jews, to leave their homes and leave their businesses and bring them back to Israel. And that's exactly what they did.
What we can call Israel, it was very much Israel. For all the years I lived there.
Right.
Yeah, well, yes, that's right. And I finished the article and I sent it out. And in those days, when my life with a computer was a lot simpler than it is today. But then I sat down and I watched TV for 1 second. And they were talking about a storm that was had been formed in the Atlantic and was gaining strength over the Bahamas, and it was anticipated that it would hit the United States, and they called it Katrina. And then I see the word Katrina, I suppose, in my head. I'm not sure. But then I see Katif. And I just subtract the cot from Katrina and the cot from Katif. And you get a strange message when you do that. The remaining letters from Katif, removing the cot, are if. The remaining letters of Katrina, when you remove the cot, are rain. And I said, well, what is this, if rain? And I went back to my computer, and I said, and I wrote it out, I said, I saw a very strange vision I've had. And I wrote Gush Katif and Gulf Katrina. And I wrote just that. I said, if Katif, Gush Katif, is evacuated, the result is going to be rain. And that was the message. If and rain. That message went everywhere. And you would be surprised how little credit I've ever given, ever been given for my work. That one spread everywhere, all over the world, that Katrina was the punishment for pulling on the Gush Katif. Because the next day or the day afterwards, the forces went into Gush Katif, and then a day after that, Katrina hit Florida and Louisiana and the Gulf States.
But I think the significant thing is the fact that America was forcing Israel to do this. This is what people don't understand. We'll be right back in just a moment here to wrap up this evening's program with our special guest, Barry Shamish. Well, Barry, do you think that was a coincidence, or do you think that there may have been some divine relationship to what happened?
I got to tell you the truth. I don't know. All I know is it just hit me. And by the way, if it is a coincidence, it's a really good one. Okay, really it is. That Katif would be evacuated the day before Katrina hits. Is a very, very good coincidence. So let's leave it at that. All I can say, once again, the lack of credit given to me was made black and white when a writer for the Israeli right, his name is Manny Winston, finally acknowledges that he has received a report. Excuse me, this was about 3 days ago, 4 days ago. I've been saving it just for my files someday, that he received a report that he is convinced that the rabbis and the political leaders of Yesha have been suffering terrible losses that are inconsistent with coincidence. And I look for my name. Nope. His report came directly from me, but they're too ashamed to mention my name. And I look at this and I'm wondering if I was really, if I really just wanted fame out and out, I'd go back to Israel where everyone knew me and I'd take a chance to die famous. But these people don't understand something very, very straightforward. They're writing in a way that is just what the New World Order wants. They're writing absolute nonsense. There's only one way that Israel can be saved, and that's if the people of Israel revolt against their government. Not wait for elections, not sending out petitions, or the stupidest thing of all, writing the White House or the Knesset. Undoubtedly the most futile waste of energy anyone could ever bother to do. They actually have to take a chance with their lives and revolt and bring down that government and replace it with anything. I mean anything. Two cows and a chicken would be better than what they've got running that place right now. If Israel doesn't start behaving like Israel, and Israel doesn't do what it used to do, which is threaten its enemies with what it can do,
Barry, we're out of time. God bless you. We'll talk to you again.
And that means Egypt, that means Syria, and that means Iran, even if need be. Well, Israel will actually die, and the only way that's going to happen, ultimately, is if that government finally is thrown out in a coup d'etat. And that's the only way I see Israel saving itself. And there really is, I don't even think that. Even that won't work. The time has run out in Israel, I'm afraid.
All right. Well, God bless, Barry. We'll talk to you, I guess, tomorrow morning.
You will indeed.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is very pessimistic about the future of Israel, but I think with good justification, because I think the Israeli people have been betrayed by their leaders, and nobody there has the courage to do anything, and certainly nobody within the military or police has the courage to do anything, because they have been infiltrated as well. And that is exactly the same thing that's happened in the United States. I mean, we have courageous people in the military, but they're not the ones who get to be the generals. We have good people working with our intelligence agencies, but they ordinarily don't get promoted. And we have people who are dedicated to the destruction of the United States, who are dedicated to the destruction of Israel, working at the highest levels of both countries. How do we understand this? Well, we understand it by reading my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, about the fact that there really are secret societies, all joined together by one common purpose, to bring about a world government, to bring about a new world religion with the destruction of Christianity and of Judaism, and, of course, all under the control of a world leader. And this plan is 5,000 years old, and it's coming to fruition right now while we're living. That's why you need to read my, or pardon me, watch my talk. It's on DVD, The Forbidden Secret. That's The Forbidden Secret. You need to get our four-tape or four-CD set, The Secret Behind the Secret, which goes into Rhonda Burns and her book and video or DVD that called The Secret. And she will tell you there has been a secret that has been passed down for 5,000 years by the secret societies. It comes from the emerald green tablet of Hermes, and it has always been there. It is the source of great power and great wealth and great prosperity for those who will tap into the secret. And I want to tell you that what Rhonda Burns has said is absolutely true, but under no circumstances do you want to try to tap into that force, because this is the force of the other god. And there really are people who believe that we worship the wrong god, who worship the other god. And if you want to get into this more, you need to get the material we've mentioned, The Forbidden Secret DVD, the four-tape set or four-CD set, The Secret Behind the Secret, and then you'll want to get the DVDs, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, Riddles in Stone, The Atlantis Connection, and The Emergence. And these are DVDs we put out. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our website is RadioLiberty.com, and many of these DVDs you can actually see there free. But quite frankly, we need your help. And if you believe, as I do, that freedom is worthwhile fighting for, perhaps even dying for, why, we hope that many of you out there will join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. We're not suggesting revolution. We're not suggesting militant action. We're suggesting we're involved in a spiritual battle. And unless the people of America turn back to God, God is going to turn against this country. And it's a terrible thing to live in a nation under the vengeance and wrath of God. Believe me, it is. And if you don't have a personal relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ, let me suggest that you get down on your knees tonight and ask Jesus to come into your life. And he will. He'll transform your life as he did mine and as he has with the lives of so many people. So we hope that many of you will give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. That you'll join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. That you'll tell others about our program and explain to them that there really are secret forces working behind the scenes, using America's wealth and power to bring about a new world order, a new world religion, and with a new world leader.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.